You are now listening to Mark's Unexplained World by Mark the Medium from Hinckley Community Radio, a non-profit podcast radio station. Tonight's episode is about Tolpa, so it's over to you, Mark.
In short, a tulpa is a manifested imaginary friend that can act and think independently outside of your own consciousness. The concept originally came from Tibetan Buddhism and was later found in traditions of mysticism and the paranormal. The materialized being or thought form is typically in the shape of a human being and is said to be created by spiritual practice along with intense concentration. With the more energy and focus you put into creating the tulpa in your mind, the more actual, independent and powerful the tulpa becomes. It is also said that after a while and with lots of practice, it can seem like you are actually interacting, although it is still only in your mind, with an independent person, spirit, energy, or entity. And just to take this concept a step further, you can also manifest a tulpa that can not only think independently, but it can also advise you on things and help you get through life and as it does all this while it sits living inside your head. Most modern practitioners who call themselves tulpamancers use the term to refer to a type of willed imaginary friend which practitioners consider to be sentient and relatively independent. Greetings, Unexplainers. Thank you for tuning in again and listening to this imaginary episode of Mark's Unexplained World. My name is Mark Hughes. I'm a psychic medium, a ufologist, and a man who either talks to himself or his imaginary friend. In this episode, I'm going to tell you about the strange and imaginary world surrounding the tulpa. And this week's necessary disclaimer... Actually, this week's episode is pretty family-friendly, so you don't need to hide anybody away in fear of offending or upsetting them. But, as usual, you listen at your own discretion, remembering that all opinions and comments are strictly my own, and that the facts still remain. I also apologise if I pronounce anything incorrectly. As usual, I can say that my English, although it is my first and only language, this week I can't really go wrong with the word taplu. Laktu. Tulpa, that's it. Tulpa, yes. Anyway, let's get back to the story at hand. As I mentioned earlier, a tulpa is a manifested imaginary friend that can act and think independently outside of your own conscious mind. And the word tulpa itself comes from the Tibetan phrase meaning to construct, to build, or to create. It has been said of these tulpa that with plenty of practice, it can actually feel like you are interacting with an independent person, spirit, energy, or even an entity. The concept of a tulpa has origins in the Buddhist Nomanakaya, which when translated from Tibetan means sprupa, which are the early bodies that a Buddha manifests in order to teach those who have not attained nirvana. And before you all start reaching for your music CDs, I'm not talking about the rock group. Nirvana literally means blown out, as in the flame of an oil lamp. It is a concept in Indian religions, including Buddhism, Hinduism, Jainism, and Sikhism. The extinguishing of the passions, i.e. the flame of the oil lamp, is the ultimate state of soteriological release and the liberation from suffering and the cycle of birth and rebirth. Another concept is that it is a practice through which the Tibetan monks would primarily create tulpas to overcome attachments such as phobias and desires. These Tibetan monks would first create entities that were either formless or in the shape of a common animal. This entity would be an expression of something from the Tibetan monk's mind. One example would be, if the Tibetan monk had a fear of spiders, the tulpa that he had created might have approached the spider fearlessly, showing him that there really is nothing to fear. Or he may demonstrate how pointless his fear or phobia was in the first place. Once the tulpa's purpose had been served, the Tibetan monks would then meditate on the experience, and the tulpa would then disappear. In the 1905 book, written by the theosophists Annie Besant and Charles Webster, called Thought Forms, published under the Occult Theosophical Society, it documents probably the most well-known historical account of tulpomancy, which was experienced by the Belgian-French explorer Ms. Alexandra David Neal. It was recorded that
when Alexandra David Neal journeyed through Tibet, one of the many mystical techniques she studied was that of tulpa creation. She became so interested in the concept that she decided to try to create one of her own. Alexandra David Neal's tulpa began its existence as a plump, benign little monk similar to Friar Tuck. It was at first entirely subjective, but gradually, with practice, she was able to visualise the tulpa out there like an imaginary ghost flitting about the real world. In time, the vision grew, both in clarity and substance, until it was indistinguishable from the physical reality. But the day came when the hallucination slipped from her conscious control. She discovered that the monk would appear when she had not willed it. Furthermore, her friendly little figure was slimming down and was becoming distinctly sinister. Eventually, her companions, who were unaware of the mental disciplines she was practicing, began to ask about the stranger who had turned up in their camp. At this point, Alexandra David Neal decided things had gone too far and applied different techniques to reabsorb the creature into her own mind. The tulpa proved very unwilling to face destruction in this way, so the process took several weeks and it left Alexandra Neal, David Neal, exhausted.
Alexandra David Neal did raise the possibility that her experience with the tulpa could have been illusory, claiming that, and I quote,
"I may have created my own hallucination."
Although she did claim that others could actually see the thought form that she created. The theosophist Annie Besant also writes in her book, also writes in her 1905 book that tulpas are divided into three classes. The first class are forms that take on the shape of the person who created them. The second class are forms that resemble objects or people and may become ensouled or endowed with a soul by nature spirits or by the dead. And the third class are forms that represent inherent qualities from the astral or mental planes, such as emotions. The occultist William Walker Atkinson, who was also an attorney, merchant, publisher and author, wrote the book The Human Aura in 1912. He described thought forms as, and I quote, "simple ethereal objects emanating from the auras surrounding people that are generated from their thoughts and feelings." He further elaborates on how experienced practitioners of the occult can produce thought forms from their own auras. Time for a small interesting side bit. According to spiritual beliefs, an aura or energy field is a coloured emanation that is said to enclose a human body, an animal or an object. Psychics and holistic medicine practitioners often claim to have the ability to see the size, colour and type of aura that surrounds us as individuals. According to William Walker Atkinson's book, these auras serve as astral projections which may or may not look like the person who is projecting them, or as illusions that can only be seen by those with awakened astral senses. After this first short break, in part two, we will look at a little more history regarding the tulpa and tulpomancy, and some of the established communities surrounding them.
This show is brought to you courtesy of Neil Packer and the Haunted Antiques Paranormal Research Centre. Find them online at www.hauntedresearchcentre.com or at 9211 Regent Street, Hinckley, LE10 1AW. Open on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for guided tours of the haunted rooms at just £3 per person. Booking is essential at all times, and over 16s only, please, unless accompanied by an adult. The haunted rooms are extremely haunted, and paranormal activity could, and has, taken place at any time. Some areas and particular objects or items can be quite scary and unnerving. Membership is available for £25 to qualify for selective offers. And why not download the app available on both iOS and Android for only £3.99 to keep up to date with what is coming up at the centre.
In the 1960s, there was a resurgence in the West regarding the subject of creating thought forms, or tulpas, with an emphasis upon self-help and understanding. However, when it came to the religious side of life, tulpas and tulpomancy caused a major problem. You see, many religions saw tulpomancy as inviting demons into your life, or that you are being possessed by a demon. This is, of course, a subject of much debate, everywhere and down to each individual, as each religion has its very own set of beliefs that are followed. I suppose one of the most common questions regarding tulpomancy is, are tulpas real? Well, from what I've researched, the main consensus seems to depend on the individual, and that tulpas can feel as real as you want them to feel. You see, because tulpas are generated in our minds, they can be made to appear as vivid or as vague as we want. So it sort of comes down to the individual's ability to imagine things and be, well, creative. And I think it's probably safe to say that a tulpa is real to the person who created it, but they are not real in the sense that you can interact or see someone else's tulpa. You can only see your own and share stories and experience about them or it with others. Tulpamancy itself exploded in popularity when it found a new home on 4chan's My Little Pony discussion board. On an interesting side note, 4chan is an anonymous English language image board website launched by Christopher Moot Poole in October 2003. The site hosts boards that are dedicated to a wide variety of topics, from video games and television to literature, cooking, weapons, music, history, anime, fitness, politics, and sports. Registration is not available and users typically post anonymously. As of 2022, 4chan received more than 22 million unique monthly visitors worldwide, of which approximately half were from the United States. 4chan has often been the subject of media attention as a source of controversies, including the coordination of pranks and harassment against websites and other individual internet users, and the posting of illegal and offensive content as a result of its lax censorship and moderation policies. In 2008, The Guardian summarized 4chan community as, and I quote,
"lunatic, juvenile, brilliant, ridiculous, and alarming."
It all started with a thread posted on 4chan by a user who went by the online name of Plebe. When he shifted his subject from lucid dreaming to tulpamancy and found, very much to his surprise, that he drew in a large amount of attention with very eager prospective tulpamancers. So on the 16th of April 2012, this plebe then later found the forum tulpa.info, with a subreddit for tulpamancy being launched on the 27th of May that same year. This online tulpamancy community then later shifted from the metaphysical to the psychological approach, with emphasis upon finding explanations and securing research on the tulpamancy phenomena. Sorry, guys. So, we now ask ourselves two questions regarding the practice of tulpamancy. First, in what ways has the practice changed from its original roots? And secondly, in what ways does it continue to change going forward? Well, I think it's safe to say that aside from the initial inspirations of creating a tulpa, Western tulpamancy is a practice that is very different from its original practice. They are now created for a variety of reasons, some being similar to Buddhism and occult curiosity, and some not so similar. I think, though, throughout time, and this is just my opinion, of course, the most common thing about tulpamancy is that it seems to be companionship, seeing a tulpa as a person of their own making, rather than as a tool. I also think that the Western tulpamancy community is shifting towards adopting a better understanding of tulpamancy in the wider context of psychological plurality. On another interesting side note, in its simplest form, psychological plurality refers to having multiple headmates or individual identities coexisting within one body, such as with schizophrenia or multiple personality disorders. Imagine, if you will, each headmate having a distinct personality, a unique consciousness, with each one possessing their own name, pronoun, goal, and preference. Collectively, these headmates form a group known as a system. Some of these Tolpa or Topalmancy communities gained popularity when adult fans of the television series My Little Pony started discussing Tolpas as characters from the show. The adult fans did this by the use of meditation and lucid dreaming techniques to create their imaginary friends. A quick interesting side note on lucid dreaming. Lucid dreaming is a phenomenon of sleep in which one is aware that one is dreaming. But it doesn't stop there, oh no. Individuals who practice lucid dreaming are not only aware that they are dreaming, but they also have the ability to direct the content of their dream and their own actions within it. I myself practice lucid dreaming, and it is an awesome experience. I really recommend you try it for yourself sometime. Surveys by practitioners, Visiera, explored the My Little Pony adult fans community's demographic, social and psychological profiles. These practitioners believe that within these communities, a Tolpa is considered either a real or somewhat real person, with the number of active participants in these online communities being in the low hundreds, with very few meetings actually being held in person. Looking at some of the figures, most of the Western Topalmancy communities belong to, and I quote,
"primarily urban, middle-class, Euro-American, adolescent and young adult demographics."
With, and again I quote,
"citing loneliness and social anxiety as an incentive to pick up the practice."
In a survey, 93.7% of respondents expressed that their involvement with the creation of Tolpas has made their anxiety condition better and led to a new, unusual sensory experience, with another survey finding that 8.5% support a metaphysical explanation of Tolpas, 76.5% support a neurological or psychological explanation, and 14% supporting other explanations. Tolpamancy continues to attract the scientific, media and casual interest, with several media publications and new Tolpamancers entering the community every day. It has also been found through this survey that some Tolpamancers have had sexual and romantic interactions with their Tolpas. However, this practice is, surprise surprise, controversial and trending towards a taboo subject. Yeah, because that's where it gets weird, eh guys? After this second short break, in part 3, we will look at the do's and don'ts of creating your very own Tolpa.
Fright Nights was established in 1999 as the first company in the world to offer overnight ghost hunt experiences to the general public, pioneering paranormal events since the last century. Fright Nights operates at hundreds of the UK's most haunted and exclusive venues. All events have their own team of experienced paranormal investigators, mediums and psychics. They have a VIP members club for regular returning guests, offering loyalty discounts and exclusive invitation-only events. They can also host private events for your family and friends. You can contact them on 07852 998 628 or email them at office@frightnights.co.uk, or take a look at their website at www.frightnights.co.uk, where you can see the many locations they investigate and learn about them and the opportunities they have available. Hundreds of ghost hunters join Fright Nights every month for the most thrilling ghost hunting experiences they'll never forget. If you haven't been on a ghost hunt before, then why not join them to see what it's all about? Why not visit their social media sites for up-to-date information on all the places they visit and to see what's coming up in the future? They look forward to seeing you all soon. Fright Nights ghost hunting events. Remember, only the original will do.
There are many reasons why one might want to create their very own tulpa. The main ones, I think, are companionship, friendship, and good old-fashioned conversation. I know it might sound strange to a few folks out there, and I think we probably live in a world where not a lot of people would admit it, but I think lots of us already sort of talk to ourselves anyway, especially when life gets a little tough. We either chat to ourselves in our own heads or sometimes even out loud. Why? Because there are times when we just sometimes fancy a chat. So, in some ways, this could be seen as a similar situation, and by creating a tulpa to have someone to talk to, you're sort of making a friend that you could never lose. I mean, let's face it. You cannot only talk to your tulpa about absolutely anything and everything that does happen in your daily life, but you can also talk to your tulpa about absolutely anything and everything about things that don't happen in your life. I mean, the possibilities are absolutely limitless. And not only that, but having a tulpa could make your own life seem, well, a little less boring and lonely. Okay. So let's look at the sort of things you should think about before you try to create your very own tulpa. I should point out here that I am no expert on creating a tulpa, and that these are just a few ideas that I found through various websites. So, one of the first things you should do is take a little time to really think about what you want your tulpa to look like and who you want your tulpa to be. One website does say that you will find after a while that the tulpa itself will sort of change into what it wants to be, and that it is not a problem. However, though, at the beginning, still take your time to really think about how and who you want your tulpa to be. And also think about what you want to use your tulpa for and what you'll ask it when it's here. For example, maybe you just want your tulpa to be a friend, or maybe you want something more serious like a life advisor or even a life guide. From what I can gather, these things are really important to consider long before you even try to practice manifesting one. Also, when creating your tulpa, consider what you think you might want it to look like. Is it going to be either human, an animal, or even a cartoon character? Or maybe it won't have any form at all. However, from what I can gather, most tulpas do prefer to have some sort of form, as they like to be seen and interacted with. One of the things that may help you with forming your new friend is if you can physically draw a picture of what you think your tulpa is going to look like. However, just to confuse things even more, some websites do say that it is probably best to just keep the image of your tulpa in your mind, as this is where you'll mainly be interacting with it whenever it manifests. Also, think about what sort of personality you want for your tulpa and sort of entity you want to create. Do you want it to be funny and someone you can have a laugh with, or someone more serious to interact with? Also, think about its will and its influence. So, let's have a look at how you can create or manifest your very own tulpa. To be honest, I found many ways in which this could be achieved, so I'll try and keep it to the most popular method I could find on the internet. It mainly involves a lot of concentration and a lot of hard thinking about interacting with a third person or a person other than your own mind. Concentrate and imagine who and what this person or thing would say to you, and quite simply, reply to it. On a short interesting side note here, and just for your own reference, creating a tulpa can also be known as tulpa forcing or tulpamancing. Once you have a clear idea of what you think your tulpa should look like and how you think it should act, you can then practice talking to it. I can't deny you may feel a little foolish talking to thin air, but remember, no one else is looking, so it really doesn't matter. Try giving your tulpa a name, or try opening up your mind a little more and let it tell you its own name. You will find that the more creative you are and the more you open your mind, the more you will enjoy the experience. It is suggested that once the tulpa has its own name, you should then practice listening to it, but make sure you don't overthink it, and don't force it to speak to you or think too much about what it is going to say. Just relax and let any words or any conversation come naturally. And don't worry if you are having difficulty in the early stages of creating your tulpa, because it's perfectly normal, and in most cases, it does involve lots and lots of practice. From what I can gather, it doesn't actually take long to create a tulpa, especially if you practice it often. If you can practice for about 1 hour a day, you should create a... If you can practice for about 1 hour a day, you should create yourself a fully grown, all singing, all dancing, top of the range, first class tulpa in about 2 weeks. Sometimes a little longer, sometimes a little shorter. But about 2 weeks serious tulpa forcing should do it. So, you've been practicing your tulpa forcing for the last couple of weeks, and you want to know if your tulpa is actually present and could do things without you. The best thing to do is perform a quick test. And from what I can gather, the best way to do this is to lay back, close your eyes, and let your tulpa show you something. However, don't ask the tulpa to show you something in particular. Just say something along the lines of,
"Show me something random."
The idea behind this method is that when it's done properly, your tulpa should be able to show you something strange. Maybe your tulpa will take you for a walk in its home, or maybe it will show you its favourite place to hang out. Just remember to not overthink it. Let all the thoughts come naturally. The next thing to ask is, how do you get rid of your tulpa? If you want to get rid of your tulpa, there are a few things you can do. The main way of achieving this seems to be down to thinking about your tulpa while you're in meditation. Imagine your tulpa standing there in front of you, and then practice seeing it inside a white shield of light. When the shield is up, your tulpa cannot be heard and is unable to interact with you. If you practice this method every day by seeing your tulpa inside this shield and being unable to make a sound in your mind when the shield is up, this will help you to remove the bonds between the tulpa and yourself. However, do bear in mind that it could take a little longer to remove your tulpa than it did to make it. So, on another point, are tulpas dangerous? I personally would say that tulpas aren't dangerous to other people, but they could be a danger to you as the person who has created one. You see, you are in every respect talking to yourself, but not just any old talking to yourself. You could be doing it to the point where you can't tell the difference between talking to yourself and talking to another person. So this can be dangerous in the sense that if you talk to yourself for long, the lines between the tulpa world and reality could become very hazy, with every possibility that you could potentially go insane. So if you do try to create your own tulpa, don't go mad, literally, and make sure you know what's real and what isn't, and that your tulpa is only real in your mind.
Thank you all for taking the time out to listen to this episode of Mark's Unexplained World. In our next episode, show number 94, we are going to be looking at the Kira UFO incident, although it is a little known case in the West. The incident in the Kira region of Kochi City in Japan in the early 1970s is not only one of the most debated in the country, but a case that actually left behind physical evidence. There were many theories regarding the Kira UFO. It was either considered a non-terrestrial surveillance device, a kind of alien drone, or perhaps even some entity with unknown technology sent from another world, another time, or even another dimension. It was even considered at one point that it may have come from the depths of the oceans to observe the human race.
This show was written and researched by myself, Mark Hughes, and proofread and edited by Linda Hughes. The pronunciations of all the names and places, though, was all mine. The actors in this episode were Mark Hughes, Linda Hughes, and Denise Pula. With special thanks to Neil Packer and the staff at the Haunted Antiques Paranormal Research Centre in Hinckley. And of course, a big thank you to everyone for listening. Mark's Unexplained World, because there's more to the paranormal than meets the third eye. And remember, guys, keep it real, because being real is better than being perfect. This show and all its contents are covered by basic copyright of Mark the Medium.